welcome everybody to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board. What we're going to be doing today is talking about unusual deals. Now, I was really prompted to talk about this particular topic because I was talking to one of my students today and he was keen on a particular deal. Well, actually, he was frustrated. He was frustrated because he was finding all these deals and he didn't think he could get into them. And I said, okay, well, give me an example. Tell me what they were. And one of the deals that he was a little bit keen on was actually a business deal. It had a business attached to a commercial property, or it was an industrial property. It was a car wash type of thing. And, I had a look at the accounts and other bits and pieces, but I was talking to him about it, and the price tag was a little bit above where he would normally be able to be looking. And I said to him, you know, with a deal like this, this is the ideal deal to do a terms deal. This is the kind of deal that you want to be having a look at and see whether you can, you can buy maybe the real estate. You could afford to buy the real estate, which is about half the purchase price. And I said, why don't you just do like a lease on the business with an option to purchase at the end, or an option to purchase on both of them with a lease in between, so you can get in and start operating? Because as per usual, typical businesses that involve cash, there was a lot going off the top and wasn't being declared, which, you know, I mean, that's the way things used to work. And this was an older guy that had his business, but of course it makes it very difficult to be able to sell the property, or particularly the business, and it makes it a little bit difficult to be able to borrow money for the business and or the real estate. So, you know, it made things a little bit difficult all round. Now, as I said to him, that's a huge opportunity. That's a great opportunity, because what it does is it gives you the ability to be able to talk through all of those difficulties with the, with the seller, and tell him about how the fact that, you know, if not you, it's going to be somebody else that's going to have those kind of difficulties. And then really sit down and work out with the guy what he needs. See, it's not necessarily always about money. The buyer always thinks it's about money, but it's not. It can be about the terms. It can be about the way the deal's structured. And I said to him, find out. You know, he may be somebody that wants $400,000 or $500,000, and he's got a need for that, but he may be able to leave the rest in the deal and do a style of a vendor finance deal, you know, a vendor deposit deal, if you like. Or he might be somebody that isn't really interested in the money, and the reason he wants to sell it is because he's sick of the workload. He doesn't want to be there every day. He's getting older. He, he's where he lives now isn't where this particular place is, so he's got to travel there every day. I said, more than likely, that's going to be the case rather than dollars. So what we talked about was finding out, first of all, what he needed. And once that was achieved, then you'd be able to structure the deal around it. I mean, that's the great thing about doing unusual deals. Anything is possible provided the buyer and the seller agree. You decide how you put the deal together. The lawyers are there to basically give you advice on each side, but also to to do the paperwork and make it watertight around whatever the agreement is. But as far as the agreement goes, it can be as flexible as you can possibly imagine. So don't ever get discouraged about not being able to get into the market, or not being able to get into a particular market, because there's always a way. And it's usually the unusual deals, the difficult deals, the ones that are a little bit different that not everybody's interested in, they're the great ones. Because what that means is you can really structure a deal that works for both parties. The great thing about unusual deals is that you've got to work out a win-win situation on both sides and then just structure the deal around that. Now, here to speak with us today, I've actually got one of my students with me. You know him well. It's Mr. Ian Ugarte. Now, he's been here talking about some of his deals and how they work, and I can tell you now, he's one of the experts when it comes to unusual deals. How are you, Ian?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me along.
Very good. Great to have you here, and great to be sharing your knowledge with all of the students today. Now, tell me, Ian, we might go through some of your unusual deals and how you were able to put them together. Where do you want to start? What would be a good deal you'd like to talk about first up?
I mean, I think firstly, it's when we do deals, it's I have to say that we've never done a standard deal. And it's always had some sort of component that's quite different. It's either an access prior or extended settlement or a delayed settlement, and they mean different things. And I'm always trying to get into the next deal. Sometimes you don't have that cash available, and these sort of weird deals are ones where if you're very low on equity or serviceability, you've got to look at every possibility to get you in. We love to do the research on the vendor's situation, finding out using all the tools, the Investar tool or any other thing that you have available, to research the person, what they're up to. There's no use trying to get vendor finance from a vendor that only owns one property, because it's quite likely they're selling that one to go and buy another. But if they have one or two properties and you can work out that that's an investment property they're selling, it's quite likely that they will try and do some sort of deal.
I always like to deal with other business people. I find they're the most flexible. Your mum and dad, very unusual that they'll sit down and do a structured terms deal. But if you're dealing with another business person who's got varying needs and varying requirements for their funds and their timing and all of that kind of stuff, and you're right, the more properties they have the better, because the less important the one is that they, you know, that you're happen to be dealing with, they're the ones I love, they're the ones I really like to get my teeth into. Ian, I actually like your latest deal the best. I mean, I know all of your deals, or I think I do. The latest deal is the one that I absolutely love, because when you decided to move from Sydney and sell your PPR, I've got to call it the Priscilla Queen of the Desert car, because you went out and you bought this motorhome that, guys, if you've ever seen the movie Priscilla Queen of the Desert, that's what this thing looks like, I tell you. It's the funniest looking bus you've ever seen. But Ian, his wife, and four little girls all pile into this bus. And, you know, what's that thing about the Griswold's holiday or something?
Yes. It was a bit like that too. So we left Sydney, and travelled for about 4 to 5 months in the motorhome. And it was a very large motorhome, American import. Still had the exit door on the American sides, which is very dangerous when you've got kids stepping into traffic. But look, we decided that we'd had enough of the travelling and that we needed to find a new home, and Queensland's our new place of residence. So we put the motorhome on eBay for sale. Now, it's a very old 1980s motorhome, and it does look very weird. And we get some...
You're not wrong.
You get a lot of head turning when you're driving along the road, and people laughing at me, but I've dealt with that. But
you're over that now.
I'm over it now. I looked... what I did do at the end of the eBay ad was I did put, would look at property swap as part of the sale, and just put it out there. Because that's the thing. If you don't put the possibility out there, the chances of getting it are zero. If you do put it out there,
you might get it. And the thing is, you don't, you know, somebody reading the ad for a motorhome may not have the gumption or the thought processes or the education to go, well, I'm going to ring them up and see if they want a house instead or partly or whatever. So, you know, you've got to do the work there and see all the possibilities and, as you say, put it out there. And that's what you did.
Yeah, so we actually got two phone calls for properties that were in the Brisbane area. One of them was actually someone who was getting treatment for cancer, and the other one was the property we ended up going for. Now, we had a long, hard thought about the guy who was getting treatment, and we thought, from a legal perspective, although, you know, it was a good deal, there is a lot of issues that you would have to deal with if he did pass away and the treatment didn't go well. So we thought we'd go for the simple deal, which was a little four-bedroom home, one bathroom, and the guy had... it was his original PPR. He'd bought a new PPR and had put three separate tenants in, and they were absolutely trashing the place because he was looking after the property itself. So, I mean, Dempner has always said that you should never look after your own property. We don't look after our own properties. We have agents that specifically do that on a daily basis for us.
Manage your managers, don't manage your properties.
Yes, because, and look, I've done it in the past too, and there's a lot of things that come into it, and it's probably a story for another day. But so what we did was we said, okay, you want the motorhome. You have a loan on your property. We looked at the property value. We did some comparables around, and we could see that that on top of his loan, the property was worth probably, he had probably about $50,000 in equity in that property.
Go on. And just think about that though, $50,000 in equity. If he had to sell that normally, that $50,000 would be eaten up a lot of it anyway, with commissions just in, you know, selling the property and time waiting and holding costs while all of that stuff's going on. So there's a lot of other factors. If, you know, admittedly a 50 grand in a property is probably not a huge amount of money, but there'd be a lot of costs to be eaten up if you sold it just the regular way.
And so for him, you know, he liked that he came out and had a look at the motorhome before we even looked at the property, and we then went and had a look at the property. And yes, the last tenants had moved out. They'd actually not paid him $8,000. I can't understand how someone would allow it to go that far. There was debt collection notices in the letterbox. And so we went in there, we said, rightio, let's do the deal. We ended up getting 50 grand worth of equity for a motorhome that may have sold between $30,000 or $40,000. So we made an immediate gain straight away. And the way we structured the deal was that it was actually an option deal, which, you know, in previous podcasts you've listened to. And we set it up so that we didn't actually have to go and get any finance. We are using his loan at the moment. So we've set up, we're paying all the costs for the property ourselves. We did a $12,000 renovation so that we replaced every door in the property. We replaced the carpet as well. He'd allowed the tenants to paint the property themselves. And I can tell you that's a very, very bad idea because some people think they're very good stylists. And it was very dark colours, and I can understand why they were angry and punching doors. So, you know, we just put some neutral colours through and did it. It was $12,000. We cleaned up the yard, got rid of the rubbish, gurneyed everything, high pressure washed the concrete around the place, and just put some bark into the, or mulch into the garden so it looked presentable. And we got some agents over and we chose an agent, and we had it tenanted within a day for the money that we were asking. Now that deal there, the option fee was actually the motorhome. So, and we've got 4 years to take up the option. His loan has very low interest, and so that suits us very well. So when you think about the logistics of that deal, I didn't need a deposit. I just had to give up my motorhome, which I was happy to do because it costs a fortune to run.
Just explain to everybody what you mean by a fortune to run. You are not kidding.
It's on LPG, so thankfully it is on LPG. It actually doesn't run on any other fuel other than LPG. So when you're travelling around, we needed to make sure that we had a petrol station that did LPG every 400 Ks. But it takes 330 odd litres of LPG, and it uses 1 litre per 1.6 kilometres, so it really does chew it up.
So, how much is LPG these days?
Well, if you're travelling out country in regional towns, it can be as much as petrol, $1.20. So it's all right when you're in a major city, it's around 80 cents, but at $1.20 it was quite expensive. But still, cheaper for us than flying around the country because we've got four kids. So, you know, we got into that deal for the motorhome. We have 4 years to take up the option, and we also made sure that we had a nominee clause in the option, which means I can on-sell it to a party for the cost of the option fee, which was $50,000. So I'll pay stamp duty on the $50,000, and the person buying the property will pay the stamp duty on the rest. So, you know, that was a good deal for us in an area that, you know, I believe from the research around and the listening to the economists that it's growing area, so it'll increase in capital, and I don't have to try and sell my motorhome. It was done in one deal.
Pretty good, I reckon. I like that deal, like I said. That's one of my favourites of yours. But you've had a lot of crazy kind of deals. You One of your deals, actually, we talk about the fact that money's not always the determining factor, and yet everybody seems to think it is. You know, it's all about money. I'll reduce the price. I'll do this. I'll do that. It's all about price, but it's not. It's so not. I remember you telling me about one of your deals that the clinching factor was what was buried in the front yard.
Yeah, look, it was a...
Get this one, guys.
This was a really, really interesting deal because it had so many bits and pieces to put together to make it work. Where most people would have walked away from it, I actually had to piece it together. But essentially there was two people that owned one property and they owned it 50% each, and one of them lived there and one didn't. Now, the one that didn't needed the money, and we needed to find a way of being able to do the deal so that everyone was happy, because you couldn't just throw the other one out having lived in the place. She had lived there for 35 years. So we actually had to find another deal. We had to find a property that she could go to. So we found a property, bought it on her behalf and renovated it so that she could move into it. And then we got her that property. The other partner got paid out, and we got that property, and we've worked on it since then. But really, the backwards, remember, she was in that property for 35 years, so she'd spent a lot of time in there, and she had never married, and she was quite a loner. She was happy to be by herself. So to actually sell her home from underneath her and move her onto another place was actually going to upset quite a bit of her life, and there was a large transition that we had to deal with there. So like Dimna said earlier, it has to be a win-win for everyone, because otherwise, you know, I'd walk away from a deal. If it wasn't a win for someone, I wouldn't be quite comfortable with it. So the major influencing fact here, there was two major influencing facts. The person that was in the house was on a pension and she didn't want to have to pay tax. So her number one criteria was that she didn't have money left in the bank.
Good Lord.
So that she could continue to get the pension. So I was happy to work with that. That's a win-win in both situations. Jeez. There for me. But really, when it came down to it, there was one... I sat down with her one day and had a cup of tea with her, and I said, you know, what is it? There's something that must be... that you would be happy with, that would make you happy to move on.
You felt that there was something she wasn't telling you.
Yeah, and so I spoke to her, and in the end, what it was that over the time, the 35 years that she'd lived there, there was three cats that had lived with her and passed away, and from that, she had buried them in the front yard. And she actually what she asked of me was, if you could take the cat's bones... to the new property, I would be really happy if you could do that for me. And so
I did. You got your shovel out and dug up the dead cats.
I did. So she sat on the front step having a cup of tea while I dug up the three bodies. And there wasn't a lot left to a couple of them because it was many years that they'd been there. But, you know, you could see the jawbones and the bits and pieces. So I packed them into a blanket and put in a polystyrene box, and I drove out to the new property, and she sat on the back steps of that property having a cup of tea while I then buried them as well. So, and you know, and that's what made the deal, and that's a really, really good property for us. And then she was happy, and her 50% partner was happy as well.
Pretty cool, that one. I haven't had any of those. I mean, we've had deals done on business. I've done deals on businesses and getting in and having access to properties prior to the actual settlement of the properties. I mean, I do those kind of deals all the time. Let's actually talk about that. There's fors and against getting access to a property prior to the actual purchasing of a property. Let's talk about both sides of the coin. Let's assume that I'm the seller of the property here, Ian, and let's say you're the buyer. Now, let's talk about the pros and cons for each of us, because whenever you're trying to do a deal like this, if everything goes fabulously, it's great. Can be great on both sides. If something goes wrong, the solicitors will very quickly tell you all of the bad things that can happen. And, you know, as responsible investors, we need to take that into account. And you need to make an educated decision as to whether that's actually what you would do or not, you know, whether you decide to proceed or not. So which one am I? I'm the seller. One of the advantages, I guess, for a seller is particularly if I've got a difficult deal, if I'm ill, if I need to, you know, move off the property quickly, if I need some money now, but I don't necessarily need a huge amount, but I've got to act quickly. All those circumstances would be ways that I might be happy for you to take over or access my property sooner than normally buying it. As an example, there's lots of examples I can talk about with actual clients' deals, but they're the types of things you'd look at there. From a disadvantage perspective, and this is what the lawyers are going to tell you as a seller, why on earth would you let somebody into your property before they actually bought it? They could wreck it. They could rip all the walls down if you were going to do a renovation on it or something like that. You know, they could do horrible things to the property and not finish it off, and you're left with a half-finished property and all of those kind of things, which to some extent, yes, they're all true. But on the other side of it, they're all things that can be mitigated against by having a well-worded document. And that well-worded document is it's the clincher. And you need to think through all of the possible pros and cons and make sure that your document covers all of those things and you have an action plan in place if any of those things should happen. One of the deals that I bought recently was a property where I got access prior to settlement, and I spent quite a bit of money on the property, building some mobile housing, I suppose you'd call it, on the actual property prior to settlement. Now, what that meant was that I could get in there and I could improve the property. I settled it with cash money and then refinanced immediately at the higher value. Now, if in the document it actually said that if I couldn't settle within the time frame, and I had a good year to settle on the property, then all of the development on the property was mine. It was at my cost to remove it, so that's fair enough. But any of the dwellings that I put on there, they were mine, and I had, you know, a reasonable period of time to remove them after not being able to exercise the option. So there were safeguards in place, and I guess that's what I'm really trying to get across. Let's go on the other side, though. Ian, you're the buyer. Give me the pros and cons on your side.
Well, for me, I always like the access prior. And the access prior means that I can go in and do a renovation or do something to the property that will increase its value whilst I actually don't own it. And look,
So you're not paying interest on it while you're doing, you know, getting it up to a better value.
That's right. And so you immediately settle on the property, it means it's available for your tenant or it's available to put back on the market. Hmm. So the advantage is that you're saving interest.
Yep.
The disadvantage could be that you go and do some great work to this property, and looking at some of the possibilities, the vendor could pass away.
Mm-hmm.
And which means that you're going to have to wait for the whole process of the will and all, and hopefully doesn't get contested, and you know, before you can actually probably go through with the entire sale. So you could have spent a lot of money on that property, and you may not be able to access it until the settlement happens in that. So there are a few pros and cons. Look, I don't mind going into properties, and we've done them before where we have a separate contract that quite clearly states the works that we are available to do. Generally, on the other side, the vendor solicitors will always say, no, forget about it. We present them with a document and we say, all we want to do is paint and maybe replace some gutters and fix up some landscaping. And if you're getting a vendor solicitor that's saying no from the beginning, it's a good way to get your foot in the door to do some of the work at least. Once you've done that work, because the major concern is that you could go in there, you're buying a property at $500,000 to use round figures. If you go in there and tear walls out, that property is no longer worth $500,000, and that's their concern. But if you go in there and do some painting and do some bits and pieces, you have added value to the property. Whereas, and then you could go back to them and say, look, I've added value to your property. I would like to now maybe just do the bathroom. Can I just do the bathroom? Or can I just do the kitchen?
And they can come in and check and see what you're doing.
Yeah, and I've done that before. Where
and
I've had
push it that bit further.
I've had periodical inspections for that, and they've come in and generally they agree. They see that we're not there, we're not gung-ho, we're not tearing walls out, we're doing it processed.
On the other side, though, you could do all of this work and then you can't settle. The banks say, no, you can't finance it. Something happens and you can't settle. You've lost your dough.
Yeah. And that
and
that
your work.
That is a concern. But we're hopefully, as educated investors under you, we make sure that all that possibility is minimised and risk-free. So another thing I'd like to add here is that you should be using solicitors that are making your job easy, that they're within the understanding of what a property investor does and understands every component of the contractual laws in options and in selling and in buying and JV setups and all of that. And, you know, when you join with Dimpner, you get exposed to those professionals that do some fabulous work in that area. And I'm glad that I've actually got those professionals on my side, because they are the ones that actually can essentially what Dimpner solicitors do, and her network of solicitors that she makes available, is they actually educate the other side, because generally they actually aren't aware of these type of processes or the possibility of doing that.
And normal lawyers not.
And they're just a standard solicitor off the road that wouldn't know one bit of property from the other.
But
so
they have very big egos.
Oh, yes. And and you've got to be very careful with that. So, look, recently we were trying to get a vendor finance deal, and we were getting a fair few solicitors saying definitely not, couldn't do it on the other side. So we got our solicitors to put together a basic plain and simple document that we could give to the vendors so that they understood what we were talking about, and then that they could talk to their legal people and give that document to them. And then at the bottom it said, with any questions whatsoever, please call our solicitors and run through the deal. Now, we ended up with the availability of doing two deals by doing it in that way.
And the great thing about the network, as you say, and I've had the guys do it for me on many occasions, is I'll say to them, look, ring up the solicitor. I'll tell the vendor, my solicitor is going to contact your solicitor, and they can talk in legal speak and let them work it out. I'm sure we can come to an arrangement. You and I agree with each other. You and I know where we stand. I'll get my guy to ring your guy, and let's just let them have a little bit of a chin wag. And that's what happened. And my solicitors have actually talked the other solicitors into whatever deal that I was doing at the time. And that's the advantage of a strong network, an educated network, and you know, you being educated to be able to really structure the deal so you know it's sound, you know it's a good deal on both sides, and you've got the right people around to work with.
Yeah. And, you know, I started this type of process really early on. So, you know, I was naturally always thinking outside the box. There was one deal we didn't go through with it. We would have gone through with it, but the vendor ended up pulling out of it because he was a bit, he had actually had a bike accident and he wasn't as sharp as he used to be. And so he pulled out of the deal. But that deal there involved us going in. We had a 1-year settlement on the property. And a year later, we were going to go in, and he had a lot of mess around the place. It was a boat access property, and we owned a barge. So what we organised was that we would pack up all his gear, and we'd put it in the barge, and we'd take it over and put it in a container. And then there was a Norton, a very, very old Norton motorbike that he told me about that he wanted, and a mate of mine happened to have one. So I talked to my mate about buying that off him, and he said, yeah, I'll sell it to you. And then he wanted a V-dub combi, the one with the flat screen windows that opened up out the front of the combi, a really old...
Really?
Yeah, really old combi.
They did that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I can't remember what they call them, but they've got flat screen that opens up forward so that you can get air into it. So
is that what they're for?
Yeah. So that deal was done, and we were then going to move the container. We were going to ship the container to Cairns so that it could be...
Not on the barge.
Not on the barge. Ship the container to Cairns so that he could be as near his sister. Now, those sort of deals, they take some to-ing and fro-ing, but we were getting it over the line. It's just that he withdrew right at the end for a very particular reason, which was quite funny. But I was actually recently talking to, at a boot camp, I was talking to one of your students, and she's picked up a deal in a regional town which has got really good rental return prospects on it. And she bought it directly from the owner, about $100,000 under market value. And it's not a straight deal. What she's doing is she's putting 10% down right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the original deal was 10% down. So she's bought it for about $500,000. She's putting $50,000 down. And she actually isn't in a good position to get a loan. She doesn't have good serviceability. So she said, look, I need a year. And he said, yeah, no problem, but I want to move out. So she says, no problem. I will pay you $3,000 a month to be able to use your property right now so you can move out, and I will renovate it and I'll put a tenant in it and I'll pay you $3,000 a month and I'll look after the rates and the insurance and make sure everything's up to case. So they were paying $3,000, so $3,000, that's $36,000. Is that right? Geez, I'm good at maths. $36,000. So
50. And you still make profits? Really?
Lucky I've got an accountant wife. So... eventually, she would have paid the $50,000 plus the $36,000, so $86,000. So at the end of the contract, she would have had to pay $414,000 to settle the property. So that deal there meant that she wasn't paying any interest for the whole year, yet she could still renovate the property and she could put a tenant in it, and the rental returns would be really, really good for her. But... She was using, obviously, Dimpner's crew of solicitors and knowledgeable solicitors. And the solicitor on the other side rang back and said, we don't like you using an instalment contract, which is the $3,000 per month, because my client could end up paying capital gain on that instalment.
Wasn't this place his principal place of residence?
And that's right. So if it wasn't...
So there's no capital gain anyway.
So, interestingly enough, the solicitor on Dimpner's students was laughing when he was talking to his client, saying, I can't believe they're actually allowing you to have a rent-free period of a year and charging you no interest and allowing you to go in and do these things. And see, that's the ability of having a really, really good solicitor on your side that knows exactly what they're talking about. And that's a really great deal. At the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me whether she'll be able to refinance on $600,000 and get her original amount of money back as well.
Quite likely.
Yeah. Mm. So...
you were talking to another one of my students you were telling me about recently as well regarding the... you know, his deal, and it was a funny kind of deal too. What happened there?
Yeah, he had a... this one was a mining town, and there in this particular mining town there were properties that had freehold and leasehold properties. So when you've got a leasehold property, essentially you've got a 100-year lease, let's call it, and...
Maybe. They can be
different. Yeah. But this one had about 12 years left on it, and the owners were elderly and they wanted to move closer to their family, which were on the coast. So they couldn't sell the deal for whatever reason because of the leasehold wasn't...
Short term of the lease.
Short term, yeah. So what he did was he created a deal where he could buy... they wanted to live on the coast and in a particular area. So he found a unit in the area that he could buy for $100,000. And he said, I'll buy that unit in my name and you can go out and live in that unit while I actually take hold of your property and I can renovate it, and then I'll put tenants in there. And then you'll be even. And in a year's time, I will refinance your property and I'll pay you out. So not only would he have had the payout of owning the other mining property, he has bought a property in another area for $100,000, which... you know, even if it owed him nothing at the end, he still owns and he still could do a return on. So together that deal would be a great deal to move forward with. So, you know, really...
You look at deals like this, and, I mean, I can hear people saying right now, you know, why do people do that? Why would somebody accept that kind of deal? What you got to understand is that, you know, students of mine are going through a very unique process where they're educated. They're actually an elite group who understand how things come together. Simply because you're listening to this podcast means, you know, you've stepped above where most people think about property. And you've also got to understand that money and the price of properties is not always the determining factor. One of my students actually picked up a property for about 70% of the value of the actual property because the lady who owned it, she really didn't care. She had no dependents. She was actually a little bit sick, and she didn't want people going through her house. She actually wanted to move into a nursing home. She had it all organized, and honestly, she just did not care about the property. She just wanted an easy move and didn't want people traipsing in and out of her house while she was still there and sick. So he picked it up, you know, significantly below market value. So it's not always price. And I think we get very caught up on price, but it's not the determining factor. And the more you educate yourself, the more you understand a huge arsenal of tools that are available to you and negotiation strategies and the processes of really stacking a deal together, and you have all of the professional people around you, you know, creating that A team of people who know their stuff, who've, you know, have been in my team of professionals for, well, some of them 17 years. It makes me sound old, doesn't it? but it's the truth. you know, and can really work with you and advise you accurately on how to stack a deal together that normally you'd have to walk away from. And I think that's one of the huge, huge benefits.
The other component there too is that you're saying that people are saying that, but I can also hear people saying, yeah, but those deals, I'll never get a deal like that.
Oh, rot.
And interestingly enough, that deal of your student, the first one I said with the installment contract,
yep,
she actually said to me, you know, I used to hear you talk about these deals and I hear Dimpner talking about them, and I thought, I'll never get one, and here I am right in the middle of it. So, and I said to her, what's the difference between what you used to think and now? What made the difference? And she says, you know what? I just asked, and that was what made the big difference. So if you're not
and
putting
sitting
out
through
there,
three boot camps.
Yeah, sitting through boot camps is important. But if you do not ask, you're not giving them the ability to say yes or the ability to say no. Don't.
You have to find out what's making them tick. You have to find out what's important to them and then be able to think on your feet and determine what you can do, what kind of deal you could structure to give them what they want and still be able to fit inside what you want in your box of tricks.
Yeah, and so and that's what I always make sure. A no never upsets me. It just means that I can find another.
It means
another.
A no, not at the moment.
No, and I always make sure that if they say no, that the door's always open for me to come back in some other aspect.
That's exactly right. Okay, guys, that's it for us for the moment. We'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon. I'm sure I can convince this man to come back and share some more stories with us all and you know, get out there and start the process. Get on board, come along and listen to the podcast, come along to one of my boot camps if you can make it, and really start to power ahead and get some of those stories that I'm talking about in your arsenal, you know. Send me an email. Tell me what you've done and how you made things happen. Because this, you know, this is what inspires people. This is what shows people how to make things happen. And you know, the theory and the technology and the A-team around you make such a massive difference. So get out there, get educated, and get profits. That's it for me, guys. Bye for now. I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon. Jump on the website www.iloverealestate.tv and see you again soon. Bye for now.